Hi, everyone. Welcome to America Trends. Glad to have you along for this hour. I'm Amy Fuller. Coming up, we are going to have something called a neurohumorist, someone to teach us just about laughter and how great a part it plays in our lives, our psyche, our soul, our health. It's going to be very interesting. It's Karen Buxman from the High Performance Humor Institute. So we have that coming ahead. Also, Harvey Nieman, how to become the steward of your own financial future. And don't we all want to take control? Well, anyway, we can of our future, right? But financially, certainly. So we're going to look forward to that in just a few moments. And also, Senator Ted Harvey of the Committee to Defend the President, one of the biggest pro-Trump PACs in America, talking a lot about some of the political headlines of the day, including, okay, so President Trump is trying to conduct world affairs, meeting in Vietnam with Kim Jong-un for a second summit. But back here at home, what's Congress do? The Democratic Party, they block a Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which would have saved newborn babies who survive abortion attempts from negligent homicide. This is where we're at in America. So we'll talk to Ted Harvey about that. And as you see on your screen, of course, former attorney for President Trump, Michael Cohen, testifying in front of a House Oversight Committee. A lot of theater, a lot of breathless reporting from words like explosive testimony probably being thrown around. And look right here, Lindsey Graham issuing his disgust. And then the next tweet will have Bill Mitchell saying, this hearing is a disaster for the Democrats. Cohen is a joke. And the fact that he claims Trump didn't want to win instantly makes all the rest moot. Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio says, this may be the first time someone convicted of lying to Congress has appeared again so quickly in front of Congress. Certainly it's the first time a convicted perjurer has been brought back to be a star witness in the hearings. And so all this went on for hours and hours. Jordan opened up the proceedings. Let's just take a look at some of the exchange between the congressman and Michael Cohen now.
I will make sure that you and I meet one day while we're in the courthouse, and I will take you for every penny you still don't have, and I will come after your Daily Beast and everybody else that you possibly know. So I'm warning you, tread very effing lightly, because what I'm going to do to you is going to be effing disgusting. You understand me. Mr. Cohen, who said that?
I did.
And did you say that, Mr. Cohen, in your testimony on page 2, you said you did things for Mr. Trump in an effort to protect him. Was that statement that I just read that you admitted to saying, did you do that to protect Donald Trump?
I did it to protect Mr. Trump, Donald Trump Jr., Ivanka Trump, and Eric Trump.
And in your sentencing statement back in December in front of the judge, you said this, Mr. Cohen, my weakness can be characterized as a blind loyalty to Donald Trump, a blind loyalty that led me to choose a path of darkness. Is that accurate, Mr. Cohen?
I wrote that.
You wrote that and said that in front of the judge. Is that right?
That's correct.
Let me read a few other things here, and let me ask you why you did some of these things. When you filed a false tax return in 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, and 2016, was all that out of blind loyalty to the president?
No, it was not.
When you failed to report $4 million in income to the Internal Revenue Service, did you do that to protect Donald Trump?
No, I did not.
When you failed to pay $1.4 million in taxes, I got constituents who don't make that in a lifetime. When you failed to pay $1.4 million in taxes to the U.S. Treasury, was that out of some blind loyalty to the President of the United States?
It was not, but the number was 1.38 and change, and I have paid that money back to the IRS at this time.
I think the American people will appreciate that 1.3.
And I would also just like to say it was over a course of 5 years. Approximately $260,000 a year.
Yeah, and that's what I said, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, 2000, that's 5 years.
Yes.
Got it. When you made false statements to financial institutions concerning a home equity line of credit, taxi medallions, and your Park Avenue apartment in 2013, 2014, and 2015, and you pled guilty to making those false statements to those banks, was that all done to protect the president?
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Amy Fuller. Hey, are you where you want to be financially? Really? Is any of us, right? Where do you put your money? Do you know where? How much you should invest, how much you should have handy. There are all these things to think about, right? We have a great guest coming on, Harvey Nieman, coming on in just a few moments, Customize Wall Street, a practical guide to stress-free saving and investing. He's going to tell us how to be the steward of our own financial future. So we can all look forward to that. I'm sure we could probably all do better. So that's just coming up in just a few minutes here on America Trends. But right now, something else that's inherently valuable in life, and that is laughter. We have someone on now who specializes in humor. She calls herself, let's see here, what is it, a neurohumorist? Isn't that great? Her name is Karen Buxton of the High Performance Humor Institute. She's a TED Talk speaker, Forbes Books author, and again, let's just say it, neurohumorist, a pioneer in her field. And she shows high-performing leaders and sales professionals and people like us how to expand their influence and strengthen relationships to boost their bottom line, and why not use laughter. Hey, Karen, welcome to America Trends.
Thank you. How are you doing, Amy?
I'm great. Nice to see you. Oh, there's Abe Lincoln with a little, is that a little nose on his?
Yeah, that's
a little clown nose.
Abe. Yeah, that's right. You know, he had a great sense of humor.
You know what? The wise people usually do. So, okay, so when you say that, just right off the bat, why do you say he had a great sense of humor? Let's start there.
Well, in terms of his leadership, he used humor a lot. And he was known for his humorous retorts. He read a lot of humor. He shared a lot of humor with his cabinet members. And even during the time during the Civil War, there was a point in time where he was surrounded by his cabinet members, started to read some humor to them, and they protested. They said, you know, what do you think you're doing? And he said, gentlemen, with everything that is upon me night and day, if I didn't laugh, I would surely die. And he recognized the importance of humor to build his resilience. And he also used it to influence others, which is something that I teach high performers how to do.
You know, it's interesting because if you go back and look at historical letters, you can see just some of the most amazingly funny, just humorous things and people playing with each other and even people on opposite sides of the aisle, just having fun and getting along and getting things done. And because you know this is why you are pulled into the Mayo Clinic, from everything from the Mayo Clinic to the Million Dollar Roundtable, these companies have you come in. Oh, look at this. That's a cute picture. Look at Karen getting just telling him what it's like. So, but you say you're a neurohumorist, but you also say this goes back to biblical times. It's all over Proverbs and all over the Bible about how the laughter does the heart good.
We knew from biblical times that a merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but there are some who still want the research. And the good news is that now we are getting that verification. And a friend of mine who is one of the leading researchers up at Loma Linda in psychoneuroimmunology says that if we took what we now knew about laughter and bottled it, it would require FDA approval. Mm-hmm. It's just that powerful. And I have been researching humor for 30 years.
Wow.
And I am convinced that this is just, it's a secret that's right out in the open. Because humor has the power to heal. It has the power to connect. It has the power to influence. And it has the power to enlighten.
It can bring people together like nothing else. And for anyone who doesn't think it can have so much power, I'm sure, Karen, you know, if you get angry, you can feel that wave rise up in you.
Yes.
But when you laugh, those endorphins, like you say, they're so powerful. And they can actually ease pain. So, like good medicine. I mean, that's so true. But what else makes humor so powerful? How does it actually work on our brain activity?
I love this. And that's where I love to live, is at the intersection of humor and the brain, because now we understand that humor is a whole brain activity. It affects the prefrontal cortex through wit, the limbic system, which is our emotions, through mirth, which is that feeling that you get, that happy feeling, and the occipital lobe, which is our expression of humor, which is laughter. And recent studies have shown that when we are in a state of laughter that is mirthful, positive laughter, that our brain has, it's covered in gamma waves. And this is the particular brainwave pattern that we see when people are in deep mindfulness or in deep meditation for any of your viewers who would like to experience more flow and more focus and more creativity, these are the states that create those gamma waves. And so if you don't have the environment or the time to do deep meditation or mindfulness at work or wherever you are, then perhaps you could tap into humor and gain that same benefit.
I feel like what you're saying is so true, and even a layman can understand it, someone who hasn't studied it for 30 years like you, because we know you get into a good belly laugh or a really good joke, you lose all sense of anything that was wrong, where you're at. You're just in that moment. And it eases things up, and it does great things to you physiologically, so it just helps from there. The first moment of the laugh can go so far. So, and you've been doing this 30 years. How did you get involved and invested in this?
Well, I fell into this backwards, and my background was nursing, and I was teaching at a college, went back for my master's, and it was just one of those, you know, God winks, one of those moments where I started looking into the relationship between humor, health, and communication. I had read just a bit on Norman Cousins. A lot of your viewers may have heard the story of Norman Cousins, who overcame a debilitating and potentially lethal illness by watching Candid Camera. He was friends with Alan Funt.
Back in the 70s, Candid Camera.
Right. And so that was the springboard for psychoneuroimmunology. And once I saw how powerful this was, I put everything else aside, and this became my life's work. And what I've seen is that it can heal. Like you said, it's such a good healing mechanism, and it can also really influence people. And so for this upcoming year, I have a Forbes book coming out called Funny Means Money. And we talk about strategic humor for influence, because as you just mentioned a moment ago, when you're angry or when you're negotiating or when you're in conflict, humor lowers resistance. And if we can tap into that intentionally and use humor by choice, not by chance, now we've really got something.
Funny Means Money. We'll look for that book. I've got 30 seconds, but if you're not funny, can you still use humor? And how do we work it into our day if we can fit that in before the end of the break, Karen? Sorry.
Absolutely. Just accept the fact that the humor is there. It's your mindset. And increase the likelihood of this happening, whether it's allowing yourself to have more fun things around you or even an accountability partner. If you can have somebody help hold you accountable to using humor, and be consistent.
Karen, I love that, because you say allow yourself. We get so busy and we think we should be stressed and should be doing this, that. But allow yourself to have humor. It'll affect everything. She is Karen Buxman, and her book is coming out, Funny Means Money. She's a neurohumorist. What could be better? High Performance Humor Institute. Hey, Karen, come back and make us laugh, okay?
I will do that.
Hey, coming up, we have Ted Harvey, Senator Ted Harvey from Colorado, talking about the political headlines of the day, Michael Cohen testimony. It's all the rage right now on Twitter and beyond. But first of all, something that might be a little more germane to you, and that's your financial future. And how about being the steward of it instead of just sort of flailing around and hoping for the best, right, and working day to day? We're so pleased to have Harvey Nieman on. He is the author of Customize Wall Street. And so why not customize it for ourselves? Harvey, welcome to America Trends.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. So how do we all become rich? Well, maybe not rich and famous, but rich and customize Wall Street. This is a practical guide to stress-free saving and investing. Don't we all want that?
I think not enough of us concentrate on that. We do want it, but we are sometimes misled by the media, and I don't say that negatively. We believe in free press, absolutely.
But the media doesn't always focus on the things that really help the consumer, do they?
I call it Customized Wall Street because of the years I've had basically three professions, and I was a lawyer in an earlier part of my life, and later I became a professional portfolio manager, and now I really want to be a writer. I want to write about my experiences. And my observations of Wall Street, I feel, are unique. People want to know beating the market. People want to know what's the best stock. How do I get in on Facebook's initial IPO offering? And that's not really what the tools of Wall Street can offer. If you are concerned about your retirement, if you are concerned about marrying off your children, giving your kids a college education, going around the world, you want to build enough wealth to be able to do those things. And Americans are entitled to do those things. And I do think some of Wall Street and some of the financial institutions mislead us, but yet it is still the greatest source of achieving those financial goals. What the book is all about.
But not everyone like you can pay attention to the game of Wall Street staying in for the long game and all that. And all Facebook, has it blown up? Has tech blown up and all that stuff? And is it over? So not everyone can do that. So the core of this book, are there some tenets where we can take what we have and where do we start from scratch?
There are so many parts to your question. I can't tell you where to start, but I will include knowing what you can and cannot control when dealing with something that is a little bit beyond your understanding. So if you're dealing with Wall Street and you're not familiar with it, then you're going to follow certain guidance and you're going to get confused about what you can control. And just one short example is if you save for your future, you can control that. If you need to go pick a stock when the market is up, you can't control when the market is up and the market is down. That's an example. The second theme, and I know you're interested in this, it's mentioned right here in the title of the book. You want to be able to save for your future without stress and worry. And that is so important. And we don't concentrate on sharing that approach. And that's what my book is about, reducing the stress and worry of saving for your financial future.
I think it's pretty cool you're sharing that. We're talking to Harvey Nieman. Take a look at his website. You'll see he's been a successful portfolio manager, retired law professor, and now author in this book, a back to basics book to enable the common investor to use common knowledge, common sense, to customize the labyrinth of Wall Street finance to meet their future needs, and people may not even realize what they are, but you break them down here, don't you, in the book?
I do my best, and believe it or not, this is the first of three books. I'm about to go to print on my second one, which talks about the powerful tools of Wall Street, and I'm not going to finish my project until I do a third one that teaches about value investing. But I need to interject. I don't want to mislead any of our viewers. I do rely on the advice of professional brokers and financial advisors. We need Wall Street. This is not a critique. This is a way to say there can be another approach to really feel successful. I have many friends that are professional investment advisors. I have business partners. My son is one. His two partners. I'm involved in a firm.
Well, family business, huh?
It is a family business. And I'm the retiree. I'm the emeritus president of the firm I started. I'm going to backtrack, and I want to write about these things, and of course appear on your show as often as I can.
The website is customitewallstreet.com, and he's going to be here to give us advice as much as you'd like to come on, Harvey Nieman. But to get down to basics, I suppose we all need to know sort of what our goals are, besides to have money for retirement. What sort of financial goals do you guide people in right off the bat?
I actually don't choose people's financial goals because we all choose our own financial goals. You want to retire at 65. Bingo. I want
to
retire.
So you have them identify what they want and you take it from there?
I like to connect two things. I heard about Wall Street. I heard about buying stocks. I want to retire when I turn 65. To connect those two things together, use the tools of Wall Street with that purpose in mind. Oh, did you get in on buying, the stock, so-and-so stock's going up. Did you make money on that stock? Well, I didn't have a purpose or need to make money on a particular XYZ stock. I have a purpose to use Wall Street's powerful institutions to get my retirement when I turn 65.
Nice.
That's what goals are all about.
And we have to pay attention to that during the day by day, don't we? We get so busy with family, career, but we have to pay.
No, you can do a plan and let it happen automatically.
Well, you can, but you have to.
You fill the tank of gas, your car, automatically?
Oh, yeah.
Setting aside savings for your future can be automatic. It can be a discipline
and
a habit.
And you can teach yourself to do that, yeah.
Of course.
So set financial goals, have a plan to achieve your financial goals, and then you say you can ask and answer five key questions to implement our financial plans.
Not necessarily all at one time, but when you do a plan, the same series of mathematics that computes your mortgage for your house, mm-hmm. twisted around in different ways, can help you set a simple financial plan. You start with a certain amount of money, which could be a zero number, and to have your retirement, maybe you need $1 million. So you've got time. How long is it going to take? How much are you going to contribute? What a rate of return is that money going to earn using Wall Street institutions? And so the same thing that computes a mortgage or a loan turn around in five different factors, the mathematical factors, but I mentioned them over and over again in the book, and there are many ways to, I am actually developing an app that will be online, iOS qualified app, and that'll be down the road a little bit. I'm looking into some app developers that'll help me get the app, and we can do it right online, and I will not be charging until it becomes so famous that then it'll just...
Then you just have to.
You just have to.
Or else people are going to laugh and point at you, right?
Yeah.
Avoid distractions presented by Wall Street institutions and the media, and understand the concepts of saving and investing, that they all go together. 30 seconds. Do you want to comment on that or just make a pitch on how this book will help everybody?
I think one that isn't quite one of my distractions, but it talks about all of them. 30 seconds. Are you an investor or are you a speculator? Speculator goes black or red on the roulette wheel. Roll the dice. That's a speculator. An investor says, what is the cash flow developed by paying dividends if I buy a particular stock, a real estate stock, an energy stock, a utility stock? What is the cash flow? That's an investor.
So figure that out.
And read my book.
Read the book. It's Harvey Nieman. The book is Customize Wall Street, Practical Guide to Stress-Free Savings and Investing. Keep us posted and keep us with this wisdom you've got for us, would you?
I'm happy to.
Thanks, Harvey.
It's a pleasure.
Hours and hours of testimony on Capitol Hill in front of a House Oversight Committee from Michael Cohen, former attorney. Remember, that's an attorney-client privilege thing. But he's testifying against his former employer, President Trump, about the things he says went down. This man who's already been in big trouble for lying, yet here he is in front of Congress telling them what he says is the truth. Hey, we're glad to bring with us this hour Senator Ted Harvey from Colorado. He's head of the Committee to Defend the President, the largest pro-Trump PAC in America. Senator Harvey, there's so much to talk about aside from this week's, President Trump is in Vietnam trying to work on, world affairs, people not getting bombed to the Stone Ages. But the Democrats sit around here and they vote on infanticide. And they bring Michael Cohen on to testify. And let's not even talk. I don't even know if we'll get to them trying to eliminate the Electoral College. Did you get to see some of Michael Cohen's testimony?
I did not. As you can tell, I'm in an Uber. I just landed in Washington, D.C. My plane was a little late, so I jumped in an Uber, and I'm catching you on the ride to the CPAC convention. I have been following.
Now, I know what CPAC is, but
can
you just tell people what CPAC is? Because this is a big deal for the GOP.
You bet. This is the Conservative Political Action Committee annual meeting. This is where Trump got his start. He came to speak here 4 years ago, and really set off his political career here. And he will be back here on Friday or Saturday giving his speech and telling the people at CPAC how the trip to Vietnam went. And I think it'll be interesting to see what the reception is after the Cohen interview that went down today. I think it's pretty ridiculous that the Democrats realize that they can't get anything on him when the Mueller investigation is going to come out next week and say that there was no collusion. There was nothing that the Trump campaign did illegally or the administration did illegally. And so the Democrats now are trying to change the narrative and say that Cohen is the key to impeaching Trump. And that dog's not going to hunt either.
And we're pretty sure that Mueller thing's going to come down next week, are we?
Well, you tell me. CNN tells us it's going to be next week. So, of course, CNN knows everything that's
going on. I
believe
everything I hear on
there.
The FBI
investigation. Exactly.
Oh, Ted, I just have to say, I love that you're, there's Michael Cohen. I just love that you literally are in the Uber moving around. That's great. So yeah. Michael Cohen testified today. He said Roger Stone gave advance warning to Trump about the WikiLeaks dump. Oh, he said he fixed things, and it was just known that President Trump, when he said things, it was known that the whole staff was there to support him and have his back and do his bidding, even if it was something bad. He said Trump never expected to win the primary, let alone the whole election. So right there, people were sounding off on Twitter saying, well, right there, we think what you're talking about is moot because we think Trump did want to win. Did President Trump think he would win, or did he not care? Oh, there's Lanny Davis behind Michael Cohen, is his lawyer now. I hope he doesn't treat him like Michael Cohen treated his former client.
Well, I can assure you Trump would not have gotten into the race had he did not think he was going to win. And he ran this race masterfully from the time he got in and beat, 16 other very competent opponents. And he took it to Hillary Clinton and won the election in November of 2016. He knew exactly what he was doing. And Michael Cohen's just trying to cover for himself. He's already been indicted for lying to Congress. And so the Democrats invite an indicted liar to Congress to testify to them one more time. I don't think the American people are going to buy it, and I think that we are just watching another political charade by the Democrats.
What's your Uber driver's name, Ted?
What's your name, sir?
My name is Sean.
Gosh, I love this show. Ted?
He's driving a Jaguar.
Oh, my gosh. You did the upgrade right there. So we got Michael Cohen. They raided his place, and then he said, "I'd take a bullet for Trump." And then he actually said today in testimony, when President Trump says he can go out on Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and get away with it, he means it. So all these things, and the beautiful part, Ted, I'm sure you'll agree, is months ago the Democrats thought this was a man straight from the pits of hell. Michael Cohen, he's a henchman for Trump. He's bad, bad, bad. Oh, now he's a hero. Now he's telling the truth. So what should we take away from his testimony?
Well, like I said, he has already been indicted for lying to Congress. He lied about so many of the things that he came before Congress about, and now he's trying to make the American people think that everything he's talking about now is truthful. And I think that the American people are already sick and tired of the way the Democrats have tried to destroy the president. They're sick and tired of the way the media has tried to destroy the president. And every time they go after him, they come up empty-handed. And I think this is just going to be one more of those examples of the president has kind of come out smelling like a rose, and the Democrats, and in this situation, Michael Cohen, is going to have egg on his face.
You know, for decades, you've had people say that politics is boring. For people who don't pay attention, maybe the average citizen, I don't know, and I don't want to pinpoint anybody or generalize, but let's face it, now people are so invested that if you hate Trump, this is like catnip. Oh, Cohen said this. This has been revealed. But other people are saying this guy's, people on Trump's side, this guy's a liar. So Ted, what is, talking to Senator Ted Harvey, former state senator from Colorado, head of pro-Trump Super PAC Committee to Defend the President. To what end? What happens now? Cohen says something and it gives us all reason to impeach Trump or kick out Trump or, whatever their end game is. Who the heck knows?
Well, their end game is to try to come up with some evidence to show that there is justification to impeach him. And what the testimony is showing thus far is that he's just got a bunch of political catnip, like you said, narrative, but there's no substance there. There's no evidence of anything illegal. And again, it's going to come down to they have nothing, and the president's going to get, continue to be the president of the United States, and he's going to run in 2020, and he's going to beat the Democrats one more time.
Is there anything Cohen said, like, for instance, Roger Stone worked on giving advance notice to Trump about WikiLeaks? Is there anything here that you really buy into that you think could stick even if it were true? Or is it just a big, I cannot stand this word, but I'm going to say, is it a big nothing burger? I hate that word.
Well,
Hillary.
there is nothing illegal with talking to WikiLeaks. There is nothing illegal with talking to Roger Stone, who may have talked to WikiLeaks. Stealing the data, if it was stolen, is illegal, but simply talking to WikiLeaks, there's nothing illegal with that. And there is no proof that Roger Stone had anything to do with receiving the documents. And there's nothing to prove that the Trump administration or campaign had anything to do with acquiring the documents. So the Democrats can go with whatever the narrative they want, but there's nothing against the law with anything they've brought forward thus far.
Ted, where are you right now? What street are you on?
I have no idea.
Ask the Uber driver. What's his name again?
What street are we on?
We're on North 95.
North 95.
And when does CPAC start?
Tonight.
Tonight. Oh, my gosh. You should report back to us in the next couple
of
days.
I will.
Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to hold you over as you buzz around doing your fancy things. We're going to have you buzz around. We're going to talk about all these Democrats. They're still having their giant hissy fit, as you say. They don't like the Electoral College. Why? Because it didn't work for them this time. And then this big Democrats voting for infanticide. How has this come to be in America in 2019? What is happening? So we're going to talk about that when we come back with Senator Ted Harvey, and I hope you get to your destination, okay? We'll be back after this. Can't you see forever? Take my hand, just take it in. Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Amy Fuller here with Senator Ted Harvey. But do you know what your senator is doing from your state? Do you know how he or she voted last night with this this legislation that could have prevented the killing of newborn infant children? Yeah, this is actually what we're talking about. The Democratic position on abortion is now so extreme they don't mind executing babies after birth. So there is, you got to sign in for that, right, guys? Senator Harvey, it's an anti-infanticide bill, which almost like, do you even need to say anything else after that? What exactly did they vote for? What is going on, Senator?
Did I lose you?
Can you hear me?
There you go. Well, you know, this is not a new issue. Yes, this is not a new issue. This issue came to the American public's attention 20 years ago when a nurse by the name of Jill Stanek was a nurse in a hospital with the ironic name of
Okay, Senator Harvey,
Christ
stand by.
With
a nurse by the name of whom?
Jill Stanek.
Okay, good. We lost you there.
And Jill had, sorry about
go
that.
Go ahead. No, you're good.
Jill witnessed a doctor in the hospital, Christ Church Hospital. Doctor put the infant on a table and walked away. And Jill was left there to provide some comfort to the child until the child passed away. That was 20 years ago. We've been dealing with this issue ever since then. I actually carried a bill, the actual bill, the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, when I was in the State House 20 years ago. What was brought before the United States Senate was in response to the Virginia governor, who said that was just fine. There is no problem with that. And the Republicans in the Senate brought that bill forward. And every single Democrat candidate who's running for president of the United States right now voted against that bill to give protections to a U.S. citizen that is born alive on American territory simply because it was the mother's intent that the child be aborted. If that's not horrific, I don't know what is.
40 years since Roe v. Wade. And this is where we've come, and people don't want to speak up because they don't want to be politically incorrect. They don't want to hurt people's feelings. They don't want to say, a woman doesn't have the right to do what she wants with her own body, but what about the baby's body? I'll just leave it there. But now we are talking about it because states like Virginia and New York are having these really extreme measures passing, and people are cheering on their floors of their state senates. And the Democratic Party here at home, once again, blocks the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. It would have saved newborn babies who survive abortion attempts from negligent homicide. So how is this even legal, Senator? What is happening?
Well, it is the intent of the mother, and it tells you the strength that Planned Parenthood has over the Democrat Party. When all of the Democrat candidates for president of the United States would choose to vote against protecting children when they're born alive and allowing the doctors to kill a child that's born in the hospital, born in the abortion facility. It is a heinous situation where we are in America, where the majority of the Democrat Party would vote for infanticide.
Just a few days back, President Trump did some defunding for places like Planned Parenthood that advises people and pushes them to abortion clinics. I use the word push. It's just a word. Don't freak out, people. Will that really make a difference? Because we all know Planned Parenthood is just a Democratic arm, and our taxpayer dollars go for them to be able to do that and be that. So with him defunding that, will that actually give any traction to making Planned Parenthood not such a superpower?
I doubt it. They will figure out a way to get around this. I think we give right now about $300 million a year to Planned Parenthood nationally.
Say that again.
And the majority of that money goes back to Democrat candidates around the country to allow funding for Planned Parenthood to continue. It is just a cyclical situation that the Democrats and Planned Parenthood have figured out how to keep radical liberal Democrats in office, so using yours and my tax dollars.
Every year, the government, and by the government, I mean you and me, when you write your tax bill by April 15th to the IRS, every year we pay $300 million to Planned Parenthood. And a lot of that goes to support the Democrats. This is our founding fathers would just roll over and they'd never stop rolling.
But what's crazy is we had control of the House and we had control of the Senate, and Trump was president, and the members of Congress did nothing to get a bill to the president's desk to defund Planned Parenthood, even though they've been running on it for forever. And even though Planned Parenthood was shown to be selling baby body parts, we still were not able to get the political courage to defund them. If that doesn't give us the political courage, what will? And that tells you how sold out both parties are to this culture of death that's being funded by the Planned Parenthood.
There's a graphic rolling around on social media where it actually shows the body of a baby and it breaks down what every single organ or what have you is worth to Planned Parenthood when they sell it.
Right.
So look that up.
It's heinous.
Right. I'm just stop there because we don't need the tweets. Okay, Senator. So to be continued on that, we will just have to see. Let's see. We've got about a minute and a half, and I've got to ask you about eliminating the Electoral College. National popular vote passed by 12 states, including Washington, D.C. Your state, Colorado, just joined. They want to abolish it.
Yep.
Because they're having a hissy fit because they didn't win. But Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says we should keep the Electoral College and everyone should get free tuition to go there. Who wants to?
That's one of the greatest.
That's a little easy joke. Sorry, I couldn't help it. So what? But it sounds like it's getting some traction to abolish the Electoral College.
Well, it's because the Democrats lost the election last time around because they didn't win the electoral vote. And places like Colorado that went for Hillary Clinton, that is now a pretty blue state, they're now saying we're going to tie our Electoral College votes to that of the popular vote. And what I think will be funny is when Trump wins the popular vote in 2020 and Colorado would then have to give their Electoral College votes to Donald Trump. This effort is not going to go into effect until they have 270 votes at the Electoral College to implement it. So it's going to be a long time before it actually goes into place.
I can't wait to see what happens. And there's so much we've talked in recent days and we don't get to now, but I don't want people to forget the stuff going down in Virginia. Governor Northam should send Jussie Smollett a thank you note, and Smollett should send Robert Kraft a fruit basket. Right, Senator? Hey, we'll see you next time.
All right. God bless you guys. Take care.
Coco, you scared? It's a dog, Coco. Are you scared of ducks?
Come see your Christmas gift.
Really?
Yes, right now.
No! Please! Yeah.
It's free. He's yours.
Look at him. He's perfect. I love him so much.
They got a present. Our TV viewers just got to see some of the best viral pet video from around the web. And we say thank you to our YouTube America TV audience and our BizTalk radio audience. So glad to have you along. And we thank our guest, Karen Buxman. Yeah, there we are. If you can find us on YouTube America and click through, be our friend on social media. And also, Karen Buxman was here. She's with the High Performance Humor Institute. She's a neurohumorist, teaching us how to work laughter into our lives. Harvey Nieman, Customized Wall Street, is his book. And then also, Senator Ted Harvey from the Committee to Defend the President. Thanks to all them for being here. And you know what? Finally tonight, this might be the movie everyone's been waiting for maybe decades. It is called The Irishman. A lot of people excited about this. It's an American biographical crime film. Directed by Scorsese, stars De Niro, Pacino, as Hoffa, also Joe Pesci, Harvey Keitel, Anna Paquin, Ray Romano. It's the ninth feature collaboration between De Niro and Scorsese. First time Pacino has worked with, has been directed by Scorsese. So as we head on out, we're going to give you a look.
The feds are digging once again, looking for signs of the former Teamsters boss Jimmy Hoffa.
It's one of the most enduring mysteries in American history. What happened to labor leader Jimmy Hoffa?
What happened to former Teamsters boss Jimmy Hoffa?
Just where is Jimmy Hoffa?
Jimmy Hoffa is...
who was convicted only because of a politically motivated vendetta by the Kennedys.
Hoffa is now in prison serving time for jury tampering and mail fraud.
If he wanted to, with one phone call, with one snap of the fingers, he could shut the country down.
Acts of violence against truckers. Still driving, have led to a call up of the National Guard.
This nexus of organized labor and organized crime.
It was Machiavellian, the mafia and another, and his Teamster rival stabbing him in the back.
Jimmy Hoffa threatened John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, or both. Hoffa had the motive, opportunity, and means to plan the murder.
That he was a national security threat, was a person who had to be stopped.
So he goes to meet Provenzano and Jackalone at a restaurant, and Hoffa is never seen again.
Who was going to do it? How they were going to come up to him, and where they were going to dispose of the body.
And in the end...
I remember the sound of the wind as I was falling asleep. The tree branches scraping the roof like people whispering. I arrived here one winter morning, or maybe it was spring. I can't remember anymore. The mind plays tricks. Papa had just died 2 weeks before. The ground was frozen where they dug his grave. Mama left a note in my suitcase telling me to do something that would make her proud. To be a good man. I had only one thing in mind. One place to be. I met somebody else. And we talked about what we would be, what our lives were going to be like. He says, I come for a new life. I say, no, you can't. You've got to go back. He says, back where? I say, back where you came from.